Access number 28675, Mr. Eric Smith, Real 4. Now, you're back, you had this nice, eight days leave in Cairo.
That's
lovely
right.
Leave.
And then when we get back, we were at a camp just outside Alex called a lovely place where there's a big lovely bay called Stanley Bay.
And do you know the name of the camp?
Yes. Benny Hughes. Not Benny Hughes.
That's the first one.
That's the first one. Cool. Might come to me.
Well, near Alexandria anyway.
Yeah.
What were you doing there?
Well, it was a camp for people coming back off leave, reinforcements, sort of refresher camp before you went back to your unit, full of NCOs with billboards, yay, triple, shouting and bawling, people go back to your unit. Unfortunately, a diphtheria broke out.
Now, hang on, so your unit wasn't at this camp, or was it at this
Your
unit was at Amaria.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And I say, when we got to this camp, they got,
Diphtheria.
So, of course, there was a blanket on it. We were there for about 3 weeks in isolation. Then I rejoined the unit at Amaria. And the Corporal Eldred, nice little fellow, chicken farmer from Lincolnshire, who also I got very attached to, Tubby, he was about 5'2" and as nearly as wide. Charming little man. And he'd said to me when we got back from the desert, he said, Smudger, always called me Smudger, I've put you in to be an NCO. Which I regretted after. I said, no, Tubby, not for me. I said, it's a regular regiment. I've only just done one action. There's men been out here 2 or 3 years and I'm sure I'd be resented. He said, well, you're a fool. Anyway, he put me forward. I went before this nasty major. And I said the same to him, and he said, that's your decision, dismiss. He didn't think much of me, so I regretted it afterwards, because coming home from Italy, he said to me, you are a fool, Smudger. He said, you know, he was badly wounded in a Stuka raid, Tubby, and being an older man, he left us when we got back to England. And he said to me, do you know, you're a fool, he said, because if you'd taken that one strike when I offered it to you, you'd have been a sergeant in charge of transport now. But I've got no self-confidence, you know.
So what happens next then? You've rejoined him at Amaria.
After that, we rejoined at Amaria, and we report. He said, you're not going on an ammunition lorry, you're going to drive the sergeant major, who led the supply up to the tanks each night. Sergeant Major Clarkson.
And what's he like?
Oh.
Is he at RSM or...?
Sergeant Major.
Company Sergeant Major.
Yeah, he was an SHIT. Oh, that's why I went on tanks through him.
Now, what was wrong with him?
Well, perhaps I wasn't a good soldier, but at night, every night we'd take up ammo, petrol, mail, food to the tanks through Alamein, because it was all on tracks and, confined area, so many troops in that area. And I'd drive him up to the regiment and we'd take ammo, whatever they wanted, and bring back the empty lorries to repeat the same process the next night. And the first night I drove him up and we got back and got into camp, and had to go and report to the major. So I threw my bed off the truck, rolled it down on the ground and got into bed. About, 5, 10 minutes later, he came along, Smith! He said, you haven't laid my bed out. I said, not my duty. I'm not your batman. We'll see about that, he said. The next morning he struts up, pack your kit, you're going on a tank. He goes, revenge. That's true. Oh, I disliked him intensely after that.
So you weren't driving with him for long?
No, only about a few days, really, after we'd left Amaria. A week, if that. I drove him into Alex.
So you'd moved back up to...
Alamein. Southern sector. The Quattro Depression area. But before... Oh, should have said that to you before. Before we moved up.
What? Sorry.
We were allowed to go into Alex at night. and I had to drive him in one night. And there was a lovely club called the Muhammad Ali. And Nobby, of course, I couldn't leave the truck because the wogs would have pinched it. So Clarkson goes into the club for an hour or two. And while I'm sitting in the truck, along come two Australians as drunk as coots. Tanky, where are you going back to? So I said, the camp, that's, I remembered it now, Sidi Bish. Give us a lift. I said, I don't know about that. I said, you have to see the Sergeant Major. Oh, we'll deal with the Sergeant Major. He said, don't worry about him. So, of course, they both fall in the back of the truck, drunk as coots. A little while later, along comes Nobby. What are they doing in there, Nobby Clarkson? What are they doing in there? I said, they want a lift back to Sidi Bish. We're not taking them, he said. What? You know, he said, one of them struggled out the truck, grabbed by the neck. He said, you're either going to take us or I'll knock you out. Get back in, he said. They took him back. Put Nobby down to size. They were marvellous troops, you know, the Aussies.
Now, so you were posted back to the tanks.
I went back on a tank, yes.
Well, two for the first time.
For the first time, yeah.
Now tell me about, so this was still the A squadron?
Yes, yes, with Crusader tank. They were the reconnaissance squadron. B and C had got heavies, Sherman, Grant.
What did you think of the Crusader?
Well, the general opinion on it was a load of crap, but that was beside the point. The only thing that put me off as I went, on the turret, they've got "Welcome to the Mobile Crematorium" written on the turret. So that was. But a good crew. A sergeant, can't recall his name, but a trooper who came from Cambridge, a radio operator from Harpenden, and a gunner from Wales. Gravel.
I'll come back to the crew. Yeah. What about the crusade? What was it like to drive? Where were you sitting? What do each member of the crew do? You know what I mean? What are you doing?
I'm low down as a driver in the front. Then you've got the... Next to me is a lap gunner, as we call it, with a machine gun. He's supposed to be a relief driver, but often I can't drive. I don't want to drive the tank. But then you'd have the commander standing up in the turret and a radio operator and a gunner in the turret itself. So five crew.
And what was it like to drive?
Well, quite nice, yes. Two sticks.
It was two sticks?
Two sticks. And the gate change between your legs.
What does that mean?
Gate. You 1, 2, 3, 4, and you put it into a... Like that. Into there. Gate. What they call a gate change. Reverse right over.
Is that easy? I mean, you'd never driven a tank. You'd only driven the...
Ren gun carrier, yes.
How was it?
You know, they're quite easy to drive, really. Left and right sticks, you know.
You got the hang of it quickly.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, we did one or two sort of pre-Alamains before the battle, sort of schemes at night, practising. Oh,
what,
yes.
What were those exercises like? Night exercises?
Night exercises.
What was it like?
Well, just driving round in the sand and mock battle with playing about with silly things, you know.
And how did it go?
All right, yes, yeah. Yes, I didn't do bad. Wasn't too bad at all. I didn't resent going onto the tank, and I say they were nice blokes.
Well, tell me a bit more about them. I know you don't remember their names, but what were they like, and how close did you get to them?
Very. I was very close with the operator, who only died a few years ago. What was his name?
Oh. It's difficult to pick names. Yeah. I don't know.
The gunner was called Gravel, I know, a real raw Welshman. He was a nasty, well, not nasty bit of work, but arrogant little man. Treated the officer terribly later on in the tank. He'd drink the officer's whiskey. He carried a bottle of whiskey, the officer. He got a bottle a week. And old Gravel used to sup it. But he was the militant man, yeah. He's officer, all right.
He was a gunner.
He was the gunner.
What about
your
machine gunner?
Yeah.
Well, your lap gunner.
The name you'll laugh. He was called Shaggy Hughes. He had a reputation. He came from Liverpool. I worked for the Waterworks in Liverpool.
Is he a nice guy?
Oh, yeah, yes. Like myself, I think, not very ambitious and, you know, ordinary type, but yeah, I got on all well with the Shaggy Hughes.
You got on well with the wireless operator?
Oh, yeah, Frank, yes. Frank, say, he was a solicitor at Harpenden.
And what about
Westcott, Frank Westcott.
And what about the commander of the tent?
He was a sergeant. I can't recall his name. Well, I was... drove the tank, that was Alamein and onwards, and then of course trouble with Crusaders, although we didn't mind, used to break down very frequently.
Yeah, hang on, we haven't done Alamein yet. Is there anything else before Alamein, in fact?
Well, the Battle of Alam Hafa, which took end of August.
What do you remember of that?
Well, we were dug in positions, and we weren't too forward, because we only got Crusaders, which weren't capable of doing anything really, apart from roaming around. The Grants took the main part of the battle, and they were all in dug-in positions, waiting for him. And they knew through Enigma when the attack was coming and why. It was his last push, and he was hoping to come up from the depression, come up round and head for the coast, cut off the 8th Army completely. That was his objective.
And the date of this was?
End of August, 42.
And what do you remember of it? You were back off the front line, obviously, from what you're saying.
Well, we were just behind, you say. I mean, shell fire, but just behind. We weren't actually in the main defence. The heavies were. B and C squadron took the blunt. But they were all dug in and waiting for him. And everybody held their fire until they were told to. And, of course, then they hit him for 6. And he withdrew about 2 days later with heavy losses.
Did your tank open fire or too far back?
We never did, no.
And what's next after that? So that's a success.
Yeah, that was a success. Built the morale up a little bit. Monty had taken command.
Were you aware of who was commanding Auchinleck?
Yeah, oh yes, yes.
Did you have an opinion on Auchinleck and Montgomery?
Yeah, we thought,
good or bad?
We liked Auchinleck. Thought he was a good commander. Let down by his field commanders.
What did you like about Auchinleck?
Well, he organised the Alamein line. He sort of... I think he was a very fair man, really. Monty was...
You wouldn't see Auchinleck, though, would you?
Oh, no, never. Our opinion was generally that he thought he was quite a good... Wavell was very good, as you've read, probably. Auchinleck took over from Wavell. Auchinleck would have stayed in command, but, of course, it was Churchill's impatience. And, of course, here we are, what, 3 years of war and still retreating. The British public were at their lowest ebb.
Now what about Montgomery? What impact did he make? I mean, was it good or bad? Or
well, he disciplined us. We used to do PT in the mornings, which we hadn't been doing, and did a certain amount of drill again, and sort of rejuvenated us, really, to a way, I suppose. And after that Alam Hafa battle, which he won, which he knew all about, his prediction of Enigma at Bletchley, they knew when he was going to attack and why. And he managed the battle. But the actual battle plans had been laid down by Auchinleck. He knew about this pre-attack. He was going to make a last throw for Cairo.
Now, what do you remember of the build-up for Alamein?
Fresh troops. This new division came behind us, the 44th Home Counties Infantry. 3 brigades of the Queen's. Oh, we used to laugh at them because they've still got white knees. You could tell they were newcomers, poor devils. And we got them and increased artillery, better anti-tank guns, 6-pounders, which could knock out a German tank. So all in all, morale improved dramatically.
And what preparations within your unit for Alamein? You were still in the southern sector, just...
Yeah, well, general duties, keeping the guns clean and the usual maintenance, you know, keeping everything up to a high pitch.
So what happens next then?
Well, of course, on the 23rd of October, we knew it was coming. We were pre-told to what was going to happen and what our role was. And there were 2 minefields, which we'd laid when he came through to Alam Hafa. And it got to be breached, big minefields. One was called January, and the second one was called February. And the 5th Tank's job was to capture January. And they laid, of course, poor devils, engineers went in with their mine detectors, had to make a path for the tanks, which they did, because if you hit a mine, track off, you blocked everything. All right?
Yeah, carry on.
And I say the first night, heavy shelling and bombs, didn't know what was going on, the explosions and that. You were, I don't know, you know, you're just immune to it, really. And we went through and captured January. And then we were told to... Now,
what do you remember of that? You were a tank driver by this, so what do you remember of it?
The worst thing about it, I remember, was going through the track, all the sand ploughed up, when infantry were lying face forward, killed. We had to drive over them. You couldn't deviate because you had mines both sides. So there were these poor infantry blokes laying with their packs on their back, their mug, and we just drove over them. They would be, what do you call it? No known grave. And we went right through, and by
did
then...
Did you get much opposition?
No, none at all. Eye ties mostly, which weren't so much of a problem as Jerry's. Jerry had the armour, but the eye ties had the infantry. There were Paras, Free French, oh, that was there. El Fogler, that was Italians. No, we consolidated after we got through this minefield, before we advanced, and then the following night, we were with the 1st Battalion tanks then. They came through January to go through to February, but encountered very, very stiff opposition. By then, he realised it was a real attack, and they suffered quite badly. But orders were, before we ever went in, was not to lose too much, not to press, because we were needed for the breakout. The main attack was in the north with the Australians. And the special new div, which was the 1st and 10th Armoured, and they were called the Corps de Chasse. They'd got the 1st Shermans, and they were specially equipped to follow to take the breakout.
So what happens next for you? What's the next thing you remember?
So we pull back, and we sit there for a few days, shelling all the time. It was a very hot, nasty place to be. I suppose the infantry were still engaged, but we sat there for a few days, and then we moved north. About a week, I suppose. Then we went north, and then when the breakthrough came, the early part of October, 2nd or 3rd of October, we went straight through, and our first objective was Mirza Matruh.
And what do you remember of the breakout, the advance?
Well, no opposition, really. The odd rear guard, but nothing which was swept aside. We went more or less like hell for leather up until about the 5th, 6th of November, when the skies opened up and we were bogged down. So the advance and the retreat, Jerry could get away a bit more by then. And then, as always, which I suppose unfortunate in a way, our water pump went, which was a common fault on the Crusader.
On your one?
Yeah. It was an aircraft engine, you see, a Nuffield Liberty engine, modified for a tank.
And what was the water pump pop? What caused it to break regularly?
Well, I suppose it was a botched up thing, because it was an aero engine without water, and it had been modified for the tank, and the water pump was in the back of the turret on the floor, and that used to seize up. Of course, the tank would... This particular day, the gunner said to me, "Smudger, it's be hot in here. What the hell's happening? Have you looked at your temperature?" "Oh, no," I said. It was on as high as it could go. So I got out, lifted the lids. Of course, the being so hot and the pump, water pump gone, the two fans, which were outside on a chain, you never hear anything so ridiculous in your life, two chains driven on an open chain with sand, they both sheared, and the fans had gone through the radiators. So there we were. That was our story. We were there for 3 days. The regiment went on. We lost touch with radio until we were found by some Indians who were scouring the battlefield to bury dead and clear up. So they sent a transporter a day later and took us back up to the front line, Alamein, and then we were issued with another tank and went forward again.
Was the new tank any different, or was it just a...
Same thing, modified and bodged up, yeah. They were absolute rubbish. They were.
Now, so what about the rest of the advance? Has it...
Well, then we... Of course, it was going so fast by then. I say the rains came. Next thing we caught up with the regiment was at near Tobruk. It was inland. We didn't touch the coast, didn't go into Tobruk or any of those places. We went right up with them till Tripoli.
Now, anything about that advance that you recall?
Mostly, he'd blown up bridges and laid mines. It was more or less an infantry and engineers wore to clear the obstacles, etc. We pushed on and odd engagements. Often they'd say, right, we're in battle tonight. And then it'd be called off because he'd retreated to another position. He'd got to find a good position to hold in the open desert. You could outflank him. So really, it was just spasmodic fighting all the way up to Tripoli.
No particular incident?
No, no. And then when we got to Tripoli, we came along this particular day. Right, they said, Smith, you're going on another tank. You're going to drive an officer. So I went on the tank with John Roberts, whose regiment had been more or less annihilated in the previous push, from the RGH, from the Gloucestershire Hussars. Nice bloke, but as daft as they come.
And he was what, a lieutenant?
Yeah, and he stuttered. Smith, stutter up, you know. How he ever got to be...
Was he any good as an officer at all?
Not really, no. If we did schemes with Dickie Ward, because Dickie Ward was mustard, the one I talked about, we'd do schemes with in the desert outside Tripoli, and when he got back, he'd have an analysis of what had happened. Roberts, he said, if that had been real action, he'd have been knocked out three times. Poor old John.
Now, what tank were you in with Roberts?
Crusader.
Still in the Crusader?
Still troublesome, yeah.
And what about the rest of the crew with Roberts?
Who were they then? I've got a different crew, of course. I was the only one who went to the crew. A nice fellow who was killed accidentally. Peter Goddard from Clapham in London. He was the operator. Very nice chap. The gunner was... This Welshman came on, was on the tank. Gravel. And the radio operator... Oh, only four crew, because we've got a six-pounder on the tank by then. So one crew had gone and made an ammunition rack of it next to the driver. So we only got four. There was John Roberts, myself, Hughes on the gun, and Peter Godsmark in the operator.
And how did you get on with this crew?
Good. Oh, yes. Peter was a nice... He got killed accidentally. Very sad. Came from Clapham in London. He was also in for a commission, and he got the white... put white epaulets on when they were being put forward for a commission, and he was waiting to go to a...
When was this? Later on, or...?
This was January, after Tripoli. January 43. Yeah.
And how was he killed? I mean, what was...
Well, unfortunately, we were preparing for a battle. You've heard about that, the Maroth Line, which was on the border of Tunisia and Egypt.
Is that the next battle after
Tripoli? Yes. We did one or two skirmishes, Ben Gadan and Medinim. We had lost a few men on there on tanks, but by and large, the first major battle was the Maroth Line at Tunis. And Peter, this particular night, we cleaned the guns and adjusted the tracks, checked the oil, petrol, water, guns, ammo. Everything was ready. We were going to move off at 7 o'clock at night for a night attack. And I was sitting down with the track, I think, reading. Peter was sat in the front of the tank reading a book.
What was he again? He was the
gunner. He was a radio operator.
Radio operator, sorry. Then.
And I say he was like a second officer, really, in the turret. He used to say, don't rely on Duff Jen Roberts, we called him. Don't rely on Duff Jen, I'll put you right. I'll keep you out of trouble. He was sitting on the front reading a book, and the gunner touched the gun straight through him.
He fired.
Gunfired and killed him, yeah. He fell on top of me down the side of the tank. Very sad. 21. Bad enough to lose in action, but to lose people. Very, very sad. And of course, that night we were going in. There was a quick court of inquiry how it happened. And we buried him quickly, but the ground was very, very hard and rocky. We managed to get him down about a couple of feet and buried him in all his clothes. Had a short ceremony with the padre, a few words of condolence. And then that night we moved off. It was an attack to support infantry on the Maroth Line. But the following morning we came back to the positions. And during the night they'd lifted him out of the grave and stripped him. The wogs. He was nude, sticking out of the ground.
Now, what about the Battle of Maroth? Do you remember anything about
Maroth? Again, it was infantry battle. 50 Div, the famous 50 Div, did the main attack. but the tanks that did the support were Valentine's. Better armoured than ours were, but still only a pea shooter on the front. And they did the attack, but it was fought. Jerry was so strong, it petered out, and they had to call it off. Well, then, what was his name? The New Zealander who won two or three.
Freiburg.
Freiburg. Monty thought they could go round this Marrow Flying, go country. It was unnegotiable, they said. And he took a whole New Zealand division and the 10th Armour Division, blew the myth and outflanked the Marrow Flying, which turned the battle.
And so you weren't much involved in that battle?
Not at all, no. Jerry had one last throw before, after the Battle of Marath, after he'd won that. He had one last throw, and we were, again, the Enigma had got the gen. We knew he was going to attack. All the tanks prepared for him. They got all the Grants, a few Shermans by then, up forward. And he came forward with his Mark IVs. And to my knowledge, truthfully, with the 6-pounder anti-tank gun, which the Queens had just got, they knocked out 38.
What was this action called? Where was this at?
Just this side of Medanine. A fort just outside Marath. There's Ben Gadan and Medanine.
And were you involved in that at all, or was it more the anti-tank guns dealt with it?
Yes, it was sort of a preset battle, so we didn't take part. And we hadn't got a decent gun anyway. So A were reconnaissance mostly. We didn't do sort of so much frontal fighting.
That was your role.
Yeah.
Now, just to finish for today, what was your reconnaissance role? What does that mean? What did your squadron have to do as reconnaissance?
Well, you go forward until you contacted the enemy, try and ring back back what strength he was, who they were, what they were, what they got, and then when he opened up on you, you'd pull back and let the heavies go forward. It's more or less reconnoitering what was. And one particular chap, he'd been wounded in November, he came back to us, Sergeant Major Eaton. I never heard it before. He was on a tank on that particular battle, and he come up on the air and he said, Abel Baker Charlie, reporting, anti-tank guns in front, but don't worry about it because it's only the spaghetti eating part of the enemy. One of the first things I ever heard him say. Because they wouldn't stand and fight, they'd put the white flag up.
Was that
up.
Their reputation?
Yeah, eye ties, white flag, yeah. We used to call them the ice cream grenadiers, we used to call them.
So that was a general opinion that they wouldn't fight?
Oh, no. I don't hold, latter years with more sense, I don't hold it against them because we weren't born to fight. But they didn't like fighting. When they told us the eye ties were, oh, that's a piece of cake, you know. Jerry was a different picture. Often if you went to attack the eye ties, they were already gone. Oh dear. But they were exciting times in a way, especially when you were advancing. When you're retreating, it's very demoralising.